Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and today's conversation is with Miguel Tirado, Associate Commissioner for Personnel in the Social Security Administration. Joining us in our conversation is another PwC partner, Susan De La Garza.
Miguel, President Bush recently announced his Managerial Flexibilities Act, which includes human resource flexibilities to help recruit and retain federal workers. Can you describe some of the key human resource flexibilities provided in this initiative and how they might relate to SSA?
Certainly. It's interesting because from my perspective, and it's a very personal perspective, I don't think he's proposing any new flexibilities. I think he's proposing to enhance existing flexibility so that when he talks about, when the Act talks about retention or relocation or recruitment bonuses, It's giving managers more flexibility to use those. We already have some of those flexibilities, but I have to tell you, and I appreciate as an HR person, as a human resources person, I appreciate all the flexibilities that we can get. We're competing, regardless of whether we are or not in a recession. We are still in a tight labor market, and if when we get out of the recession, it's going to be even tighter. So we are competing out there with other federal agencies and with certainly the private sector for the best and the brightest to come in and work for us. And in a sense, we're competing almost at a disadvantage. I can't go out to a recruitment fair and spend $50,000 on a very glitzy booth with all kinds of giveaways to attract, and that works. So as a human resources person, trying to get for my agency the best people that we can, I appreciate any flexibility that I can get. But here's the catch, okay? I can't even use the flexibilities that we have today to the extent that I would like to use them, because it doesn't matter how many flexibilities I have if I don't have the budget, the money to make those flexibilities real. They don't, for all practical purposes, they don't exist. So what if I can pay a retention bonus or a relocation bonus or offer somebody 25% of their salary just to come work for me, if I don't have the money to pay the 25% of the salary? And at a time when we're going back to possibly deficits in the budget, when every agency's budget is very tight, it's very hard to carve out monies for those purposes when you still have a mission to accomplish and you have to pay for it.
So what techniques are you using then, Miguel, to, you said you hired 3,500 people a year. That's a large number of people to hire. What techniques are you using?
Well, one thing that we use every flexibility that we can get our hands on. We hire using bilingual registers. We hire using the outstanding scholar provision. We hire using the management inter program, and of course we use the standard ways of hiring. We are fortunate in the sense that because we are all over the country, and our employees are all over the country, to a large extent we use our own employees as a recruitment network to refer people in. And we try to put people out there to recruit that can actually sell what we do.
Right.
We're in the midst of creating a new ad campaign that uses the tagline, you know, come help us help someone.
Okay.
And I'd like to believe that young people out there still have a certain amount of idealism and that attracts them.
Executive pay compression is not addressed in the president's initiative. Is this a problem at SSA?
I don't know that I would call it a problem. It's a concern. Obviously, we have most of our executives receiving the same amount of pay, with the only difference being where they're located in San Francisco or in Washington, D.C., or things like that. It's not an easy problem to solve. I suspect that many of our executives stay with us until they're eligible to retire and either have their finances in order and decide they're going to go be a beach bum for the rest of their lives, which is better than having to work 12 hours a day, or get an offer from private sector company to do something similar at twice the salary, and then, of course, they have their retirement, and then they leave. They don't leave before because it's hard after you put in 20 odd years of service to give up on something that you're about to collect, a retirement paycheck. But frankly, for the responsibilities that we have, most executives have, the pay is low, relatively speaking, and you have people with all kinds of executives with, let's say a new executive with, if there's such a thing, entry-level executive duties, and the deputies, deputy commissioners of Social Security, which are the top career people at the very top of the ladder, making the same amount of money. And one has 100 times more responsibility than the other. There's an issue of fairness there. How do you solve that in a system such as ours, where you have to keep some balances with what Congress makes and so on and so forth? I don't know. I only have the questions, and maybe not even all of those.
Accountability within government agencies is an important issue. If more flexibility in HR is delegated to the individual agencies or departments, Miguel, how will SSA build accountability into its HR processes?
Well, it's interesting because I have a bias. I have a personal bias as a one-time engineer. I like numbers. And I'm a strong believer that you can't have accountability without measurement, and you can't have measurement unless you have things that you can measure. So that's one issue. Where you have a mission that isn't quite as measurable as perhaps ours is, you tend to have accountability problems. The second thing is that I'm not sure that I buy into the accountability argument itself. I prefer to think about timely feedback, and let me give you a concrete example of that. If you have an agency goal that has to be reached in 3 years, and it's a complex goal, it's not going to happen overnight. But by the same token, it's not going to happen if you hold the manager or the executive leading it accountable once a year or twice a year, with some kind of performance system. And by the way, we've had, at least during my career in the federal government, 5 or 6 different mm-hmm. performance assessment systems, none of which has worked very well at all. I think that the better way to proceed is to ensure that you're somehow measuring progress toward your goal, in that particular case, once a month, and sharing that information with the people that are responsible for moving you towards that goal, so that they know where they are and they have sufficient time to use that feedback constructively to go in a slightly different direction if they have to. That the issue of monitoring, timely monitoring, and timely feedback, in my view, is a more critical one than accountability. There's a flavor to accountability that says, we want to make sure that we hold you accountable, which means that if you don't produce, we're going to punish you.
Mm-hmm. And if you produce, punitive
right,
sense.
And if you produce, that's what you were supposed to do, so we're not going to do anything about it. So that's my own personal bias.
Okay.
Earlier, you described 65,000 employees, and you went through the different kinds of employees, their different skills, and their different areas, and their different locations around the country. So that makes me wonder, what kind of technology does SSA use to manage its employees?
Let me divide that into two different questions. What kind of technology do we use in general? And, well, obviously we don't have space shuttles and stuff like that. In terms of computer technology, we are, if not at the bleeding edge, certainly not far behind. You can think of Social Security as an information processing agency. We collect your data about your wages and your contributions, mm-hmm. and you are 110 million employees in the workforce, and we store that through your work life. And we keep it, and then when you reach 65 or whatever, and you retire, we pull it out and use that to compute a payment that we make to you every. So obviously that's a huge data processing operation, and to do that we use the latest available technology. Interestingly enough, it's taken us a little bit longer then I would have wished to move in the direction of using that technology to do our personnel work, our human resources work. And that's the big struggle right now. We went through a phase that lasted about 10 years where we tried to come up with an enterprise system that took care of everything and somehow holistically in one fell swoop automated everything. And in the end, it was a big failure, which we have now discarded and moved to what I call an opportunistic strategy. Whatever we can find, a small system that takes care of some segment of one of the business processes of human resources, of personnel, then we automate that.
Well, it's time for a break. Come back with us after the break as we continue our discussion with Miguel Torrado of the Social Security Administration. How are leaders being developed in your organization? The Social Security's Leadership Development Program is one of the best. We'll find out more about it when the Business of Government Hour returns.